Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thank you for joining me. On this show, we are talking about hope, and most importantly, instilling hope. Such a beautiful subject in the midst of what feels like hopeless times. I want you to know you have power. A real power to affect change. All we have to do is tap into it, activate it, nurture it, and spread it. Hope is an optimistic state of mind that is based on an expectation of positive outcomes with respect to events and circumstances in one's life or the world at large. As a verb, its definitions include expectations with confidence, and to cherish a desire with anticipation. The very act of being hopeful instills hope. Ready to uncover and harness your power to make a difference? Encouragementology is the practice of instilling hope, a practice I created to make the act of encouraging others more intentional. When you're intentional about something, you're aware. Did you know that according to science and research, most of us live 95% to 97% of our lives on autopilot? We don't consciously think about many of the things we do each day. Imagine what you could accomplish with a little intention. You can't sit here today and not be concerned with the state of the world. A helpless and hopeless thought or two has to have entered your mind at least at some point during the day. So much to do and not enough power or resources to get it done. So what now? This would be a good time to make a little hibernation chamber, fatten up for the winter, and climb in hoping by spring you wake up to a different and more positive set of circumstances. An overwhelming feeling is hard to overcome and act upon, unless you break it down into digestible and manageable chunks. What if I told you that you don't have to save the world? You are not responsible for making the world right again. All you can control is yourself and your own actions. But you do have the power to affect real change. I started my hopeful journey wanting to help others get back into the workforce. I'm not really sure what prompted that specific entry point, except I've always been a professional person and have created opportunities where they really didn't present themselves. There must be something to this, and with a little tenacity and a snazzy new resume and interview outfit, I could help others see it too. What I found through that experience changed my world and uncovered my true purpose. I think your purpose was instilled in you at an early age, and for some, it came to the surface naturally, and for others, an exhaustive search just left them more confused. It may be because your true purpose sounds so grand and meaningful when it may be so blatant and simple. Encouragement. That's what the world needs most. Love, yes, that's a given, but encouragement makes things happen. Gives ideas flight, lifts a person over an obstacle, and propels them further and faster. Encouragement instills hope. But don't just take it from me. I found some good stuff on FactGoods.com, words of encouragement and inspiration and the science behind how they work. When you're plagued with negativity or struggling through one of life's many challenges, hearing or reading words of encouragement or inspirational quotes can help. In fact, they can change your life. Turns out there are real psychological reasons why these words work. There are many theories on encouragement and motivation, especially in the realm of sports and work. One long-held belief is that criticism is a better way to motivate people than praise. The negative encouragement is helpful because athletes, students, and employees will want to push harder to show you they're better than you think. being hard on you makes you harder, tougher, and stronger. Scientists have proved this isn't true, and there's no stronger motivation than a positive attitude cultivated by words of encouragement. Let's talk about this in child development. Studies such as the two conducted by Columbia students investigate the connection between intelligence and encouragement. They determined that students with a perceived theory that they could improve their intelligence performed better and received higher grades than those who believed their level of intelligence and ability was set at birth. Different teaching methods were applied, proving that the group with words of encouragement saw an upward trajectory. The opposite was found in the control group. Tackling a different aspect of positive language among students, IKEA hosted a study done by students at a school in the United Arab Emirates to evaluate the effect of bullying. Students were encouraged to shout negative comments and bully one plant. Yes, I'm talking about a growing plant, while talking positively to the other plant. After 30 days, the bullied plant is on the verge of death, while the plant receiving positive language is thriving. The use of plants in this study allows us to visibly acknowledge the power of our words, even on life without complex emotions. So how about encouragement and the encourager? Everyone knows what it's like to be around a positive person when you're respected, liked, and made to feel like you can tackle any project. There's power in the knowledge that someone believes in you. However, there is power in the toxicity of people as well. Either you want to stay away from them or you're sucked in and pulled down. It's only realized how heavy their words are until you are no longer being knocked around with negative comments. The new study conducted by Y. Joel Young and colleagues at Indiana University Bloomington in 2019 was conducted to evaluate encouragement as a character quality. These researchers hope to find a way of measuring encouragement to enhance psychologists' ability to counsel their students. According to the study, a genuine and natural side effect of encouragement is a character strength that you benefit from just as much as those being encouraged. The personal and psychological benefits of a positive attitude and regular words of encouragement, there are fiscal benefits. This is true at least in fundraising and sales, according to one study published in the Journal of Business Venturing. The study states that entrepreneurs who express positive psychological capital, such as hope, optimism, and confidence, experience greater fundraising results. Essentially, those with a greater attitude, who both feel a sense of confidence and resilience and invoke those emotions into others, experience better gains. A positive attitude is gained through words of encouragement and supporters who express them. It's built by containing the theory of intelligence that you have an ability to improve rather than remain at a fixed state. By building someone's confidence, society gains both professionally and psychologically. So let's see how athletic performance is affected. Negativity and criticism are common in many parts of our lives. In most areas, there's an understanding that encouragement and positivity work best as motivators. This doesn't hold true within the realm of sports. Coaches and parents and fans still berate their athletes, work them with criticism, get them angry because they believe that anger will fuel them somehow. That comparison to other athletes and devaluing of skills held by the one they're trying to help will motivate the subject to work harder. But in fact, the opposite is true. According to Dr. Paul Freeman, athletic performance is not just based on natural skill and level of training, but on a frame of mind. Dr. Freeman claims that athletes value words of encouragement from professionals, teammates, and parents, though it can come from anywhere. Even something as simple as a tank top with the motivational quote, "You can do it," can go a long way. Now that you have all of this in mind, it's clear to see why quotes are important and how positive words of encouragement can benefit in all areas of life, school, sports, work, or relationships. Start every day with inspirational quotes, surround yourself with supporters, and enjoy the benefits of words of encouragement. You can create your own mantra to get you in the mood. Wake up and simply tell yourself, "This is going to be a great day." Whether you truly believe it yet or not, there is power in the words and thoughts you put out into the universe. Imagine how your day will go when your first thoughts are dejected. You wake up full of regret and anxiety about the day. You have work left undone, bills piling up, and a bank account that is shrinking. Where's the joy, and how are you supposed to fake it? You take that sour attitude with you into your first encounter. Someone else hit the snooze too many times, and Grumpy has some company. You both make matters worse by finding even more wrong with the world. Now you're searching for others to pull into your pit of despair. Not enough in your immediate vicinity? No worries. You have the whole Facebook network to inform. All the likes and loves just confirm this day sucks. Exhausting. How about you climb back into bed and start this day over by harnessing your power to effect real change? The alarm goes off and you take a moment to listen and ready your mind to find gratitude. Today, I will have a positive outlook no matter what or who crosses my path. I'm in charge of my mind. Thank you for a chance to share encouraging thoughts with another person today. I'm going to seize the opportunity to make a difference. You stay lifted as you head into work and encounter your first person. Ah, he seems down. Let me remind him of all that is right with the world. Good morning, Stan. Thank you for your help last week with those reports. I couldn't have done it without you. I know you're going to have a great day. Remember, you're in charge. You diverted Stan with a moment of positive reflection, which just might have snapped him out of his bad mood. But here's the great thing about encouragement. It isn't your job to make Stan see the positives in the day. It's only to instill hope and let him uncover the rest. Continuing to build up our pros column, here are five more benefits of encouragement from Kevin Eikenberry. Encouragement provides awareness. We had just said that. When we encourage people, we let them know what we think and that they matter to us. Encouragement doesn't have to mean that everything is perfect or that there isn't room for growth and improvement. But it does show that there is a foundation to build from. When we provide encouragement to others, they're more aware of the perceptions of others, and this helps them understand their world and situation better. Encouragement also creates belief. When we know that others believe in us, it changes everything. When we encourage people, we are letting them know we see what they have done, and by extension, believe that they will be able to do in the future. And that improves their belief in themselves and their own potential. Encouragement builds confidence. Does your confidence grow when someone lets you know you're doing something well? Does your confidence increase when people let you know what you are doing is making a difference? It's true for you and for others too. When we're encouraged, our confidence grows. The encouragement might provide a momentary lift or change in someone's confidence for a lifetime. Either way, it matters. And you never know when what you will say will make such a big difference in someone else's confidence. So don't hold back. Encouragement improves attitude. We never feel worse after someone encourages us. Encouragement, almost by definition, makes us feel better, puts a bounce in our step and a smile on our face. And when our attitude is better, we're healthier, happier, and more productive. Why wouldn't we want to provide that to others? Encouragement promotes action. Sometimes moving forward, taking action, and trying new things is hard for anyone. Look at the four items we just mentioned: awareness, belief, confidence, and attitude. As we have more of any one of these, our ability and willingness to take action grows. Now imagine something that we could do or say to someone else that would grow all four. How powerful would that be? Genuine, authentic, meaningful encouragement is that thing. And that is how powerful it can be. Now, we all know misery loves company, and a cheerful attitude might be met with scoffing and an ample amount of eye rolling. But is that really a reason to avoid it? Connections are so important, and connecting with like minds and attitudes isn't always an option. And besides, who needs you most? Did you know that you can actually fake a smile as an icebreaker? I have never met a stranger. It's true. My mother was more worried about me going home with someone as opposed to being kidnapped. I will approach anyone. This is primarily because I think that everyone likes me. Now, you may laugh, and it is pretty funny, and probably not true, but because I have that attitude, I have no fear in approaching people. Today, with so much communication being experienced through technology, even having direct eye contact can seem forward. But do it anyway, and then smile. Not a flirtatious come-hither smile, just a joyful, I'm having a great day, so I want you to have one as well, kind of smile. Guess what? Even if it's faked, it may, not always, but may, be returned with an actual and genuine smile, which in turn will cause you to smile. What a great exchange. Let's dig a little deeper into the science of something so simple. Here's an article I found from Leo Wildridge, The Science of Smiling, A Guide to the World's Most Powerful Gesture. Why did the Mona Lisa become one of the most famous paintings of all time? That's a question an incredible amount of people have asked themselves in the past. And one possible answer is this: because of her unique smile. The smile is the symbol that was rated with the highest positive emotional content, concludes scientist Andrew Newberg. So here's the science of smiling, and what happens to your brain when you smile. Let's say you experience a positive situation and you see a friend you haven't met in a long time. This means the neural signals travel from the cortex of your brain to the brainstem, the oldest part of our brains. From here, the cranial muscle carries the signal further towards the smiling muscles in your face. Sounds simple, right? And yet, that's only where it starts. Once the smiling muscles in your face contract, there's a positive feedback loop that now goes back to your brain and reinforces our feeling of joy. To put it more succinctly, smiling stimulates your brain's reward mechanisms in a way that even chocolate, a well-regarded pleasure inducer, cannot match. Smiling seems to give us the same happiness that exercise induces, for some. In short, our brain feels good and tells us to smile. We smile and tell our brains it feels good, and so forth. So, real versus fake smiles. Can we really tell the difference? Whenever we smile, there are two potential muscles we activate. The first one is the zygomaticus major, and it controls the corners of your mouth. Whenever this muscle only is activated, it's not actually a genuine smile. I bet you're all doing it right now. Scientists call this also the social smile. You know, the one you give in the store when you run into somebody you know, "Hi, how are you?" The second muscle, known to show sincerity, is the orbicularis oculi, and it encircles our eye sockets. The true smile, also called the Duchenne smile, named after the famous scientist who first separated the mouth corner's only smile from the eye socket one. Our brain can, in fact, distinguish very easily between what's real and what's fake. In fact, researcher Dr. Nadenhell argues there are three ways you can do so. Our brain compares the geometry of a person's face to a standard smile. We think about the situation and judge whether a smile is expected. Most importantly, we automatically mimic the smile to feel ourselves whether it is real or fake. If it is real, our brain will activate that same area from the smiler, and we can identify it as a real one. Nadenhell then experimented with how important it is to be able to mimic smiles, or whether we could still tell the genuine smiles from the fake ones. Dr. Nadenhell and her colleagues asked the students to place a pencil between their lips. This simple action engaged muscles that could otherwise produce a smile. Unable to mimic the faces they saw, the students had a much harder time telling which smiles were real and which were fake. So the fact that we can't try it for ourselves leaves us almost unable to identify any smile as fake or real. Why is this so important, though, to know what and what doesn't trigger us to understand smiling? Well, here are some insights. Smiling can change our brain through a powerful feedback loop, and your brain keeps track of your smiles, kind of like a smile scoreboard. It knows how often you've smiled and which overall emotional states you are in. Smiling reduces stress that your body and mind feel, almost similar to getting good sleep, according to some recent studies. And smiling helps to generate more positive emotions within you. That's why we often feel happier around children. They smile more. On average, they do so about 400 times a day. While happy people smile 40 to 50 times a day, with the average one of us only about 20 times. Why does this matter? Well, smiling leads to decreases in stress-induced hormones that negatively affect your physical and mental health. In the famous yearbook study, they tracked the lives of women who had the best smiles in the yearbook photos compared to the rest. Women who smiled the most lived happier lives, happier marriages, and had fewer setbacks. The baseball card study also found a clear correlation between how big a smile someone made on a baseball card photo and how long they would live. The people who smiled the most turned out to live 7 years longer than those who didn't. And most importantly, smiling can be learned, or to put it more precisely, relearned. Most of us forgot how to smile genuinely over time as we adopt social smiles more and more. Here are three steps to get your smile back. Imagine a situation of joy before the event. One of the best ways to make your smile more genuine and real comes from researcher Andy Newberg. We just asked a person before they engage in conversation with someone else to visualize someone they deeply love or recall an event that brought them deep satisfaction and joy. Try to do the same experiment before a phone call or even before writing an email. People can always tell if you have a smile on your face, even if they don't see you. Practice smiling in front of the mirror. Practice activating both your mouth corners and your eye sockets. You will know whether your smile is genuine because you will immediately feel happier and more relaxed. The power of a smile, even practiced in the mirror, is that can invoke emotion immediately. A lot of people see smiling as something that makes you weak. Developing a better smile starts with being more comfortable. If in your head you can imagine yourself going through the day and smiling to everyone and everything, that's often when a happier life starts. So here's a quick fact. Women smile more than men. And here's why. Researcher LaFrance concluded that overall women smile a lot more than men. This comes not just from the fact that they might be happier, but also that socially it's more acceptable for women to smile. And it doesn't stop there. In general, women are more accurate than men in detecting what is really going on with someone by looking at their face and listening to their voice. Women are more likely to tell the difference between a genuine and a fake smile. Smiling is definitely more than just a concentration of muscles in your face. In fact, the words of Mother Teresa, "We shall never know all the good that a simple smile can do." I hope you're smiling now with the anticipation of the opportunities tomorrow will bring. To give people an applicable takeaway from my sessions, I developed Here's Your Cue. Cue, C-U-E, standing for connect, understand, and encourage. This idea is tangible and easy to identify. The first time I gave this idea in a talk, a woman said, "Oh my, I did that today and I didn't even know that's what I was doing." Remember the importance of being intentional. It starts with making a connection, not on the phone or over the internet, but a real face-to-face connection with another human being. In a study published by ENEW, our understanding is deepened of just how eye contact prepares the social brain to empathize by revealing that it activates the same areas of each person's brains simultaneously, synchronizes. Specifically, eye contact was shown to involve the cerebellum, which helps predict the sensory consequences of actions. And it triggers the limbic mirror system, a set of brain areas that are active both when we move any part of our body, including the eyes, and when we observe someone else doing the same. The limbic system, in general, underlies our ability to recognize and share emotion. In other words, it's critical to our capacity for empathy. The eyes are the windows to the soul, right? And most experts agree that 70 to 93% of all communication is nonverbal. So being face-to-face is always best for true benefits. However, this isn't always possible. But use technology as a plan B instead of an A. Next is to understand. You don't have to agree with someone to understand where they are coming from. Just listen to understand. Instead of thinking about what you want to say while the other person is talking, really listen to them. The experts call this active listening, and there are a few different components, says Sarah White from Lifehack. Pay attention. When someone is talking to you, look at them. Notice their eye contact and body language. Take in their tone of voice as well as what they are actually saying. Really listen. Listen with your body. Turn toward the person who is talking. Lean in. Make them feel listened to because you are really listening. Make eye contact, smile, nod, and make leading noises like, uh-huh, really, go on, tell me more, when appropriate. Don't interrupt. The best way to make someone feel like they're not being heard is to interrupt or talk on top of them. Listen fully and wait until they're done to ask questions or add your thoughts. Repeat what they said. Don't just say what you're planning to say. Show that you've heard what they said by repeating back to them a summary of what you've heard, when appropriate, definitely before adding your own opinions. Respond to what they said. Be honest and respectful in your responses, and remember to talk and listen in the ways that you would want to be talked to or listened to. And lastly, encourage. We've talked a lot about that, but it boils down to this. You can do it. I know you can. I have faith in you. I believe that you can succeed. I know that you have what it takes. I'm confident you can do it. These little words can make all the difference in the world. See, to be motivated is to first have a goal. But when you don't feel worthy or capable, goal setting is the furthest from your mind. Just go for it is meaningless. The day I uncovered encouragement, it came in one statement at the end of a long job-seeking workshop. The attendee said to me, "Thank you so much for making me feel so good about myself today." And that's it. We all possess the power, but until we are encouraged to activate it, it lies dormant. Don't miss your opportunity to affect real change in the people you're around. Here's your cue is appropriate for any age, any situation. It's being intentional with your encouragement, with your connections. I gave this talk to a group of teenagers before they headed back to school. At first, of course, they looked at me like I was crazy. You know, no one wants to listen to an adult talk about encouragement. What? But as they started to listen and I started painting the picture of their classmates, friends, people that they encounter in the hall of school, some they might know, some they don't know, and how we walk around with blinders on, purposely not catching someone's eye so that we're not bothered or we're not imposing on them. We all have this little solo approach to everything that we do. And when we take those blinders off and we start looking around, we can really see when someone's hurting, when someone needs a little extra pick-me-up, when someone could benefit from being talked to. So many times, we just stay in our own bubble and we don't step out and connect. We can do this with the young. We can do this with the old. So many times with an elderly person, we might think that they don't feel good. They're tired. Maybe they don't hear well. And we might as well just let them be. But that's the exact opposite of what they need. People need to connect and feel important and feel heard. Thank you for sticking with me as we talked about the power of encouragement. You know, maintaining strong human connections is not only your gift to humanity, it's for your own well-being and survival. Donna Piscano-Brown wrote a piece for LIHerald.com called The Power of Human Connection, and it's so important. We all know that comforting feeling when we're being physically embraced, feeling heard, emotionally understood, and supported by another human being. That warm feeling of human connection is so important in maintaining our overall emotional and physical health. In fact, dozens of studies have shown that people who have satisfying relationships are happier, have fewer health problems, and just live longer. A relative lack of social ties is associated with depression and later life cognitive decline, as well as increased mortality, and why understanding human connection is so important. Human connection is an energy exchanged between people who are paying attention to one another. It's the power to deepen the moment, inspire change, and build trust. When researchers refer to the concept of social connection, they mean the feeling that you belong to a group and generally feel close to other people. Scientific evidence strongly suggests that this is a core psychological need essential to feeling satisfied with our life. Emma Sapala of the Stanford Center of Compassion and Altruism Research and Education, the author of the 2016 book, The Happiness Track, wrote, "People who feel more connected to others have lower levels of anxiety and depression. Studies show that they also have higher self-esteem, greater empathy for others, are more trusting and cooperative, and as a consequence, others are more open and trusting to them." Brené Brown, a professor at the University of Houston Graduate College of Social Work, specializes in social connection. She said in an interview, "A deep sense of love and belonging is an irresistible need of all people. We are biologically, cognitively, physically, and spiritually wired to love, to be loved, and to belong. When those needs are not met, we don't function as we're meant to. We may think we want money, power, fame, beauty, internal youth, or a new car. But at the root of most of these desires is the need to belong, to be accepted, to connect with others, and just to be loved. Resilience, the ability to bounce back after stressful situations, is strengthened when you give and receive support. Building positive relationships with people can make a difference in how resilient you are. Try to connect with people who have a positive outlook, and can make you laugh and help you. The more positive your relationships are, the better you will be able to face challenges. Social isolation is a state of complete or near complete lack of contact between an individual and society. It differs from loneliness, which reflects a temporary lack of contact with humans. Social isolation is far and away the strongest social risk out there, said Steve Cole, a genetics researcher at the University of California in Los Angeles. Loneliness and social isolation take a steep toll on a human body. These, in turn, can undermine the well-being of nearly every bodily system, including the brain. Studies show that people who are chronically lonely have significantly more heart disease, are more vulnerable for cancer, have an increased risk of stroke, and are more likely to develop neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's. Lonely adults are 25% more likely to die prematurely. Elderly people who are lonely die at twice the rate of those who are socially connected, all of which make the spike in loneliness in American society even more alarming. Researchers estimate that some 60 million Americans, one-fifth of the population, suffer from the pain of loneliness. And with millions of baby boomers now facing a radically shrinking social world, the rising tide of loneliness has all the hallmarks of a widespread and costly epidemic. For those who doubt, just think about the sting of rejection. A brain imaging study led by Ethan Cross at the University of Michigan suggests that the same parts of the brain are activated during social rejection as during physical pain. Another recent study led by Shelley Taylor at the University of California, Los Angeles, suggests that stress due to conflict in relationships leads to increased inflammation levels in the body. Both physically and psychologically, we experience social connection as positive and rejection or loneliness as negative. According to Matthew Lieberman, a professor at the UCLA, the importance of social connection is so strong that when we're rejected or experience other social pain, our brain hurts. In the same way they do when we feel physical pain. Social and physical pain are more similar than we imagine. We don't expect someone with a broken leg to just get over it. Yet when it comes to pain of social loss, this is a common and mistaken response. The bottom line, we need to take social pain just as seriously as we do physical pain. Data indicates that we can increase social connections through practicing compassion for others as well as for ourselves. Another way to build stronger social connections is to ask yourself, what would make you happy in contributing to your community? Focusing on what you can give to others is a proven way to feel both better about yourself and more connected to others. You can contribute by educating yourself on hobbies or a cause that matters to you. Look for clubs, organizations, regular events, and programs connected with your local community centers like libraries and schools. You must know who you are and have confidence in yourself if you desire to connect with others. If you don't believe in who you are and where you want to lead, work on that before doing anything else. In a world full of people, what can be more beautiful than knowing how to form healthy relationships and establish deeper connections with those around you? To feel socially connected, especially in today's increasingly isolated world. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they are not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, take control of your day and point your trajectory in a positive way. Use your encounters as a chance to instill hope by connecting, listening to understand, and offering words of encouragement. What are you waiting for? Here's your cue. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. I stumbled through until the path was clear.